Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame, the show where we talk about movies that don't get talked about enough. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on today's episode, we are already fucking up our new catchphrase by talking about Spider-Man Far From Home and discussing Spidey's future. But first, let me introduce two mysterious women who are not Donnie Nelson, Caitlin Sellers.
Hi, everyone.
And our special guest, Riley Maloney.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining me, because Donnie was not available.
I'm glad we could come, you know, as a second choice to Donnie.
And to ruin your opening catchphrase about talking about movies that don't get talked enough about.
Yep, you guys don't watch weird enough movies.
Sorry.
It's all your fault.
I mean, the only time I do is when you make me.
So this is my fault?
Yes.
All right, well, we're going to start watching some real fucked up shit.
Hard pass. Hard pass.
The hardest of passes.
All right, well, let's just get into it. Caitlin, I have a question for you, which is, what is the worst thing that you have seen recently?
So, normally I feel like I haven't seen enough to answer this question, but we've seen a couple of things recently. Mine is Beach Bum, or The Beach Bum, I think.
The Beach Bum.
It was okay. I mean, it falls under, like, my worst, more so, because I've liked a lot of the things we've seen lately. You know, the cinematography was interesting. I liked the use of color. Matthew McConaughey was funny. The storyline I was not interested in. There was a lot of, I mean, with, who's the director?
Harmony Korine.
That's right. As you said, you just kind of have to, like, go, you're just, like, there for the ride. But there were just a lot of plot holes or, like, stupid things that happened that just completely pulled me out of it, and I just, like, couldn't enjoy it.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's a movie that you have to watch just for the, like, the experience of this is what Florida bums are like. Or a.k.a. just Floridians are like.
Yeah. Snoop Dogg was in it, and he was great. I thought he was really funny.
Well, in the movies he's been in, he's actually been a really talented actor.
Oh, yeah.
He adds just that little bit of piece, not being the main focus, but being just that little extra. It makes it just a little bit more special, you know?
Totally. Yep. What? You're giving me a look.
Great. Visual humor for an audio format.
Yep.
Perfect.
Riley, what is the worst thing that you have seen recently?
Well, I haven't been able to see a ton of movies lately, but the one that I actually did go see recently that I wish was better, even though I liked it a lot, was Detective Pikachu. And mainly just because a huge Pokemon fan, I loved the movie, personally, but it was not a good movie by any means. It's definitely made for diehard fans, which is unfortunate, because I think it could have been a really good step of a more mainstream approach to Pokemon, instead of just the games and the anime and the cartoons, but instead it kind of fell flat. Mm-hmm. And just,
I said it before in the episode that I was in where we talked about it, and I will say it again, they had one of the greatest, like, affronts to humankind when they put Ryan Reynolds in some pants that did not compliment his butt at all. They were saggy, and I was completely offended.
I can't say I blame you for that.
He was like, he walked up and you saw him, and I was just like, yes, you get to see him from behind, and then there was no behind.
The other part too is, you, not that you're expecting Deadpool humor out of Ryan Reynolds being a voice actor, but it just seemed to fall short in capturing his humor. It could have been so much more versatile, and instead it felt he was more stifled into being a kid, like super kid friendly Pikachu.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not that we're expecting F bombs every so often, but.
Totally.
But come on.
I'm motherfucking Pikachu, and well, I've got a detective hat.
And I need to solve some mysteries.
I was like watching a clip of an interview with Ryan Reynolds about Detective Pikachu, and he said that he like did all this research about like noir detectives and had this whole voice and this whole attitude that he was gonna have, and he was like super prepared for this character, and he goes in and started it, and they were like, okay, stop, like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm trying to blah blah blah, and they're like, just be Ryan Reynolds.
Yes.
And so
just do Deadpool.
Yeah, basically.
But tone it down.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because it still didn't feel like it really captured his full voice acting ability to portray and give life to a character.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem for me was that Pikachu is animated and not just Danny DeVito wearing a Pikachu costume.
Pikachu hat.
I really, really wanted that, and I still want that. And someday I hope somebody makes a cut of the movie where it's just Danny DeVito quotes from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I could live
whenever
with that.
Pikachu talks.
I could live with that. 100%.
All right, well, the worst thing that I watched recently, because I don't get to pick the movies that are on while I'm at work, was the Heartbreak Kid, the Ben Stiller unclassic from the Farley Brothers.
Man.
And if no one's familiar with The Heartbreak Kid, it is a film about a guy who meets the love of his life, but she's moving, so they get married so that she doesn't move. And then immediately after getting married, he realizes that he absolutely fucking hates her. And that, like, she was either lying or misrepresenting things about herself, or he was reading too much into details. And then while they're on their honeymoon, he meets another version of the love of his life.
Oh my god.
And so it's, but and who he continuously lies to. And so it seems like a really fun idea, because it's like, you know, he meets this woman who basically catfishes him, and then he marries her, and then while they're on their honeymoon, he basically starts catfishing another woman. And it seems like a good idea on paper. But I'm really not a huge fan of anything the Farley Brothers have done after, like, Kingpin and There's Something About Mary and Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
I wasn't even that crazy about Green Book, which was just one of the Farley Brothers. And
I loved that movie.
I know you did, but I did not. And so, I just feel like it gets too bogged down in their toilet humor, in the physical the overdone physical comedy elements, and a lot of just Ben Stiller playing into the Ben Stiller, character tropes, kind of the way that Adam Sandler has done his entire career.
I was just going to say, like, The Waterboy is, like, something that comes to mind for me for Adam Sandler, because even though he wrote that movie, he helped create it, it was so much a character that only Adam Sandler can play. Mm-hmm. And that sounds very similar.
Yep. So, yeah, that was the worst thing that I've seen recently. And, I feel like if it had been somebody else's hands, maybe it would have been worthwhile. But it wasn't, so it's not. All right, Caitlin, what is the best thing that you've seen recently? Other than my beautiful face.
I don't know about that. I'm just kidding. Yes, it's beautiful. But it's not the best thing I've seen. I think the best thing that I've seen this week is Midsommar. I was very apprehensive to see it. Honestly, the only reason I was going to. I mean, it looked interesting, but you, Jason, were super excited to go see it. So I was like, all right, I'll go. Then kind of watching the trailer, it seemed like they went and were visiting like a cult, like a hippie cult, and I'm a huge fan of, not that I want to be in a cult, but I think they're very interesting.
More like a study.
Yeah, totally.
On the wall.
Exactly. So I was interested, but then the trailer seemed like it was going to be like really gory, and I'm not going to spoil anything. It was not as gory as I expected. However, there was like, just enough gore for me. There were a couple of scenes that happened that I genuinely, like, gasped and was kind of at a loss for any reaction other than surprise.
Shock value.
Yeah. The actors were good. I'm really looking forward to seeing that girl. I can't remember her name. But the main girl in it, I'm looking forward to seeing her in more stuff. And then it was also kind of nice because Jason and I watch The Good Place, and the actor who plays Chidi was in it, kind of playing the same character.
Kind of.
I mean, he's a... What is he in The Good Place?
In The Good Place, he's a philosopher, and in this, he is an anthropology.
No, yeah, he's an ethics professor. Yep. That's what he is. So he was, like, the scholarly type, character. But... So I'm kind of sad to see him typecast, but I'm sure this is one of the first big movies he's done since being on The Good Place and really getting notoriety, so I'm also excited to see what else he can do. I'd like to see him in something different, but definitely go see Midsommar. It is
fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. That's a good word.
It's really good, and we should also mention that Caitlin is not a huge fan of horror movies.
I didn't used to be. I used to, like, not watch them at all, but after, like, being married to you, I've been exposed to a lot more. Like, we went and saw Annabelle Comes Home, and it didn't even make my worst thing I've seen. Like, it was terrifying, and I jumped, and I kind of, like, breathy screamed. I didn't really scream out loud, but... I really enjoyed it. It was really fun, and I'm also very excited for It Chapter 2, so I feel like the apprehensive horror viewer of me, version of me, is some, like, kind of falling by the wayside. I'm more excited.
It's, horror is an acquired taste, absolutely. You really have to... Like, you see a few movies, and all of a sudden you're hooked, even if you sleep with the lights on for a week.
Yeah.
And I used to be the exact same way, and really, I think it was Paranormal Activity, the first one, that did it for me.
Yeah.
I remember sleeping for a week with the lights on, but wanting to see more horror movies.
Right.
And it's just, they can be, if they're really well done, it's not even about the jump scare or the fear, it's just about the story being captivating, even though it terrifies you.
I was, like, so opposed to ever watching the Conjuring movies. Did we watch them for her Thanksgiving?
For Thanksgiving?
No, Halloween? No, it wasn't.
No, we
Halloween.
Watched them for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we watched them for Thanksgiving. That's, like, our tradition. We watch horror movies, and I loved it, and it was fascinating. And then that La Llorona movie was coming out, and I couldn't handle it on so many levels. And Jason was so excited to see it. And I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, if we go see this, you're agreeing to me waking you up in the middle of the night to bring me to the bathroom with all the lights on and then waiting for me until I'm done and bringing me back to the bedroom. Which I'd like to note that it's maybe 3 steps from our... bedroom door to the bathroom door. Like, it is not far at all, but there's no way that I was going to be able to, like, emotionally and mentally handle being in the dark by myself after seeing that movie.
Yeah.
We never saw it, so.
The only horror movie that I've actually wanted to show Caitlin that she has refused to watch is It Follows.
Never.
But
never
hopefully someday
we
will get around to watching this delightful little tale of a sex demon.
Of rape.
It's not of rape.
Yes, it is. Riley just agreed with me. For all of our listeners, she nodded along.
I mean, I think, you know, the pretense of sex demon doesn't typically, you know, preclude consent.
Thank you.
In most of those instances. I mean, maybe, if you're into that sort of thing. It's 2019. Look, no kink-shaming.
Here's the deal. We can all agree that It Follows is a charming little tale. Riley, what is the best thing that you have seen recently?
Well, this one kind of came out of the recesses of my memory when I was actually flying down to Florida about a week or so ago, and it came out in 2013, and it's not an unheard-of movie, but one I think people forget about, and it's Pacific Rim. I love that movie, and it's definitely one of the best things I've seen lately, even though I had seen it for, like, the second or third time. One, who does not love a movie about giant robots versus giant monsters?
Yeah.
But it sets up the monster versus robots, like, story so well with little information, but it doesn't leave you wondering. The movie starts with saying, this is where the monsters come from. You're like, okay, this is why we built giant robots. Okay. And it just, the characters are, I think, very well written. It is an all-star cast, but you don't really recognize them throughout the movie. You're not seeing them as other characters. You see them as who they're playing. I think they capture the characters very well. I love that it didn't end on a cliffhanger, even though they did make a second Pacific Rim movie. I love that all the monsters were differently designed, even though they didn't necessarily have to be. The fights were great, choreographed really well. It's a movie for me, because I can sit back and watch giant robots beat giant monsters, but no one's safe either. Like, many characters die. One of the main characters dies in the end. I'm not going to say who, in case anyone hasn't seen it, but it is, like, 8 years old, so get on it.
But Jason has a cap on that. If it's, like, over 10 years old, he's like, you've had enough time.
Yeah. I think it came out,
it's over 5 years old.
I think it's, like, 2013, maybe even before that it came out. But I saw it on a plane, and I watched it on this little 4x5 screen, and I was just as captivated as watching it on a big HD TV, so...
I think the best part of that movie is that the main robot's name is a stripper name, and it's Gypsy Danger.
Exactly! I love the names! And then Stryker Eureka, and the Thundercloud Formation robot, I can't think of what it's called. Three arms, amazing. you just can't, in my opinion, go wrong. It's a Guillermo del Toro movie, so in my opinion, one of his better movies. But it's not one that you think of right away when you think of what's a good movie that you like. It's not that, even for me. I honestly just thought about it on my way here. I was like, you know what's good? This movie. That's what I've watched recently that I really liked. So.
All right. Well, the best thing that I saw recently is Caitlin and I have been going to Studio Ghibli Fest at our local theater. And we got to see the 1995 film Whispers of the Heart.
I'm surprised you're saying that's your favorite thing you saw.
Oh, yeah. I had not seen it before, and I really, really liked it.
We went in, like, as a blind watch, too. We didn't know anything.
Well, that's not entirely true, because we have seen The Cat Returns, which is a sequel to Whispers of the Heart, which is strange because the cat is a doll in Whispers of the Heart.
I don't see how it is a sequel, other than there is one character in both movies that is the same.
In one movie it's a doll, and in the other movie it's a cat wearing a suit.
Yeah, they're really all the same in name, and that's really interesting.
But
yeah, I was really hoping that this was going to shed some light on The Cat Returns and that whole world, and instead it did not, but that's okay. Because I really liked it. It's just a simple romance tale. It's told in a very unique, interesting way. The characters that they created were all very interesting. I mean, everything Studio Ghibli, well, not everything, but most of the things Studio Ghibli puts out. Every movie except for the one about the squirrels with the giant nutsacks.
Pompoko?
Yeah, Pompoko is pretty amazing. So this doesn't come as any surprise, but yeah,
I still don't understand what Pompoko even means. I don't understand why that was the name of it. The squirrels aren't called Pompoko.
They're nutsack squirrels.
I'm sorry, the nutsack squirrels.
The Pompoko is nutsack squirrels.
No, it's not. I think it might be a season. I don't quite know.
I don't know.
Season of Nutsack Squirrels.
But yeah, no, Whispers of the Heart was delightful. I love that they the lead character kept rewriting that John Denver song over and over and over and over
again. Translating it for her friends.
And yeah, no, it was delightful and I loved it.
Well, the one thing you haven't said is what it's about. Are you trying to keep the mystery?
No,
for the
listeners? It's a romance film. It's about two high schoolers.
Yeah.
Just falling in love.
Yeah. I also think that
and
one...
being dicks to each other.
I think one thing that it really had going for it is... So, not to, like, spoil anything, but they fall in love, or they start to fall in love, and then one of them has the opportunity to do... to go overseas for some reason. And the other one who's staying behind takes that opportunity to better themselves, to do something and, like, work on something that they've wanted to do for a really long time. So it was kind of nice to watch this movie about two kids, essentially teenagers, who were falling in love, but... it wasn't just the message of, you know, you can make things work, like, with time and distance, but it was also, like, it's important for you to take time to also work on the things you want to and achieve the things that are important to you.
Yeah, no, it was great. I loved it. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. For me, the best scene of the movie was when, the male character, I cannot remember any of their names, but when the male character was describing how he's making violins to the girl, and then they start singing that song together, and the grandparents come in, and they're all playing the music together. That was wonderful. Yeah, no, it was great. I loved it. So, with that, before we get into our discussion on Spider-Man Far From Home, I feel like it's impossible to talk about Spider-Man without acknowledging and talking about the Sam Raimi films, which not only kickstarted the Spider-Men.
Spider-Verse.
Yep. But also kind of the reinvigorated the superhero genre as a whole. And Sam Raimi did Spider-Man 1, Spider-Man 2, both considered some of the best superhero movies ever. I consider Spider-Man 2 to be the greatest superhero film ever made, personally. And then Spider-Man 3 came out, and I don't think it's as bad as everyone remembers it, but it's not great. It's definitely not as good when you compare it to those two. And he never made Spider-Man 4, despite having plans to make a Spider-Man 4. And one of the things that I find interesting is that the villain in Far From Home, Mysterio, was supposed to be in Spider-Man 4. And the big reveal or setup was that it was going to be Bruce Campbell, someone who had cameos in Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3. And so from my understanding, the setup was going to be that... And it was also going to include Black Cat and Vulture. But my understanding was that Mysterio was going to have been... Like, Bruce Campbell was going to have been Mysterio in all those other movies... And that he kind of knew Peter Parker was Spider-Man, and he was just, like, inserting himself into his life in random ways and keeping watch on him. So, although I'm kind of bummed we're never going to be able to get that story, because Sam Raimi's not making Spider-Man movies anymore, I'm also pretty happy that they were able to tell a version of a Spider-Man movie with Mysterio. And I thought that worked out well. The other thing I just wanted to break down, for those of you who have not seen it and are still going to listen to this podcast, Spider-Man Far From Home picks up almost immediately after Avengers Endgame, maybe a couple months later, and is about Peter Parker trying to get away from being Spider-Man and going on summer vacation. And then Mysterio shows up, and he's fighting these giant elemental monsters. And then he's got almost Sentry or Superman-level powers. And then there's a bait and switch about halfway through the movie that's really, really great. And we can talk more about that in just a minute. So, before we go any further, I just want to ask, what are you guys' first impressions of Far From Home?
One thing that I was thinking about while we were watching it is, so obviously my first exposure really to the superhero world, aside from comic books, but like movie wise, was the Sam Raimi, and I really loved Tobey Maguire as Peter Parker. I thought that he fit it. I'm more nostalgic about it now than anything, because now that Tom Holland has taken over, just there was a few points where while watching Far From Home, I was just sitting there and just realizing, like, he's amazing. This is the Peter Parker that, you know, I read in the comic books, mm-hmm. and what I imagined when, like, from the cartoons, and I think he is perfect for the role. I think that he is a great actor. It's nice that he is really young, because even when Tobey Maguire had the role, he was still older, mm-hmm. so this is really cool, and I'm excited to see how far they go, because just being able to, like, watch him grow, too, into this, like, Spider-Man character, I mean, that was, oddly, like, that was my first impression, really, was just how excited I was to watch him be Spider-Man again.
I agree completely. I grew up with the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man yes. movies, too. I was very young when they came out, but still, like Jason said, they jump-started the superhero franchise. It was what led into the Fantastic Four, and then eventually Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk. And even though those ones arguably not as successful as what we see today are what revived Marvel's career, even though Spider-Man at the time was not even owned by Marvel. It's why they're still owned by Sony today. Mm-hmm. But I absolutely agree with you, Caitlin, that Tom Holland is my favorite incarnation of Spider-Man yeah. on the silver screen of any of the three that have played him. And that's not to say that the other two did not do a good job. It's just Tom Holland is young, he looks the part, the writing of his character is phenomenal, they really capture the essence of Spider-Man, and mm-hmm. he portrays it so well.
Yep.
So, I agree entirely.
Did the Tobey Maguire ones come out before or after the X-Men franchise started?
I know
they were around the same time.
I think okay. it was approximately the same time. I know the first Spider-Man directed by Sam Raimi with Tobey Maguire was in, I think, 2002 is the release date.
Okay. That,
so
yeah.
it's approximately. It least... And Daredevil, I think, was also released around the same
That's
time.
That's right. And Elektra.
Daredevil was 2005.
It's basically all the licenses terrible. That Marvel sold to yeah. keep their company afloat, for anybody that was wondering why they are not owned by Marvel today. A fun fact, I was watching a few Spider-Man theories, and no spoilers, but around the time Spider-Man 2 was being made, Tobey Maguire had injured his back, I believe, and he had gone to the directors asking for a raise, and instead of giving him a raise, they actually counter-offered, saying they could replace him with a different actor, and that actor that they were considering at the time was a much younger Jake Gyllenhaal.
What?
Yes.
That's and crazy.
Yeah, just a fun fact for all of you listening, that Jake Gyllenhaal eventually did obviously make his way into the Spider-Man movies. He plays Mysterio. However, he could have also been an incarnation of Spider-Man had Tobey Maguire walked away mm-hmm. instead of staying in that original trilogy. So.
I love Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, me too.
I don't want to see him as Spider-Man.
I agree. I think he did
he's too good-looking.
Well, even now, I mean, how many years later in this version of Spider-Man, how good he was
yes.
as Mysterio.
Yes.
Just, yep. he played that part so well.
He was so believable.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was
he
great.
He sold that characterization.
So, let's get into...
What were your first impressions?
Yeah. I really liked it. It was wonderful.
Wow, that's a great first impression, Jason.
I don't know. I mean, you guys have hit on a lot of the stuff already. I did not watch any of the trailers before this movie. Anytime a trailer would come on, I would plug my ears, close my eyes, and go blah, 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 until...
I tapped Kate, him on the shoulder. Yeah. Yep,
until she would tell me it was done. So I had no idea, other than the headlines that I would read about Jake Gyllenhaal being cast as Mysterio, I didn't really know anything else about it, so it was exciting. And, yeah, no, I really liked it. I thought that I was a little worried at first when they first showed Mysterio because, and I guess now we can start getting in spoilers, I was a little worried at first that they had revamped the character so much that they had actually given him superpowers of some sort because, as any comic book fan will tell you, Mysterio has no superpowers at all. He is just a very talented special effects guy. And... so I was a little nervous at first, and then when they revealed that he doesn't have any superpowers, he just knows some people that have drones, that made me very happy.
I thought that was probably my favorite part about the movie, because I mean, banking on Mysterio being a bad guy. Mm-hmm. When he's presented in the trailers, so for you, mm-hmm. he's presented entirely as a good guy. We all know in the comics he's not. He is an arch enemy of Spider-Man's that returns over and over again. So I was waiting to see how they're going to explain his apparent Doctor Strange almost powers. Yep. And you watch mm-hmm. the symbols on his hands, and it's nearly the same symboling, and I was wondering how they were going to explain that. And I thought the real-world implication of using drones was one of the most ingenious ways yes. to do it. It really just ties it into it being, although a superhero movie about a boy with spider powers, very real.
Yeah.
It's believable. Because there are probably drones with similar capabilities out there.
And I know that, like we were talking about before, Mysterio was being considered as the main villain in Spider-Man 4 with Sam Raimi. But I think that it was fate or just a fantastic turn that it didn't happen until now. Because to think of our level of special effects, like, our level of technology,
yep.
I would have been interested to see it back then, but I think that it's phenomenal that it didn't happen until now, because, like, just, I feel like everything fell into place. Like, these puzzle pieces were fantastic.
For a movie to come out in 2019, like you said, with the amount of... I mean, the fact that we can hologram project a deceased person's essence into a film and have it look nearly identical is... You're right. It's almost perfect. Like, it's almost better it happened this way as compared to before.
Right.
And then it's Mysterio's first time on the silver screen as well.
So... segueing into talking about a dead person on screen, you, Riley, you and I were talking about this on Friday night, that it was, I mean, Jason didn't know this, and I didn't mention anything to him, but when the first trailers come out, they did such a good job hiding the fact that Iron Man... that Tony Stark was dead.
Pre-Endgame.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it was pre-Endgame, but you were getting ready for it, and the trailers that they had out at the time gave you enough information that you were just like, okay, this is what it is, and then it didn't give anything away for Endgame. They were so strategic, it was phenomenal, and then after Endgame comes out, they released the next trailer, and, you know, Tom Holland, Peter Parker is talking about, like, to Happy, I just miss him so much. And everywhere filled. I go, I see... Yes! And you were totally right, because you had seen it before us. And then when you said, like, there's just an homage to him everywhere. And as you're watching it, there really is. Another country, and there's murals.
And even in one of the first scenes where Peter Parker is back in school, there is a wall in one of the classrooms where all it is high school artwork of Iron Man in the back. Like, it starts from there within the first 15 minutes of the film, and then from there you see the murals painted on walls, you see the memorials, just everything.
Yep.
But you're right, and it was something I never thought about until you brought it up, was that they hide it so well pre-Endgame, and then that first trailer after that drops, I think even came with the spoiler warning.
Yeah.
From Tom Holland himself, Mr. Spoiler Extraordinaire.
Right, exactly.
saying, you need to see Endgame before you watch this trailer.
Yeah, it was fantastic. They did it so well, and it just brought, like, a whole new element to the movie itself, because it is such a struggle for him, mm-hmm. and it is such a big part of the movie to then, after everything happens, I mean, because I was naive. I didn't realize Tony Stark was going to die in Endgame. And then he did. And I was like, holy shit.
Yes.
And then the trailer for Spider-Man Far From Home drops, like you said, the next one. And I was just like, oh my gosh, everything makes so much sense yes. now. Not to say that the original one didn't make sense, but it was so good.
It just clued you in further into what this movie was going to be yeah. like. Even the title, when they first came out, Far From Home, people wondered if he would still be in space. And
right.
that was pre Infinity War.
Yeah.
Well, spoilers for that movie, we found out he dies in Infinity mm-hmm. War. Peter Parker is dusted, so obviously he's not left in space, but it left people to wonder what is Far From Home supposed to mean?
Right? I believe the preferred term is blipped.
Blipped.
Not dusted.
Is, in my opinion, one of the funniest scenes when they're explaining the blip in that stupid high school video, and they show the first one where everyone just gets dusted, and you're reminded of the horror.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can you imagine being a 17-year-old kid sitting in a basketball game and watching people just fade away from you
yep.
into dust,
mm-hmm. right?
And then 5 years later to have them all show back up.
And then people are like just running into people because they're in the same spot they were before.
I actually just guffawed when that came on. Like, it was so funny to me, but I'm also a huge fan of just shock humor. Just
yeah.
So the fact that they just showed back up.
I really, to keep the Iron Man comparisons going, one of the thoughts that I kept having throughout this movie is that this is a film that is out Iron Man 3-ing Iron Man 3, because there's a lot of similarities. Iron Man 3 features Ben Kingsley as
yeah.
the, what's the villain's name?
The Mandarin.
Why can't I?
The
Mandarin. Yes, the Mandarin.
I was gonna say the Clementine.
As the Clementine. No, as
the Nectarine.
As the Mandarin, and when you get to, I don't know, like half an hour from the end, they reveal that there is no Mandarin, and that he's just an actor playing the role of the Mandarin.
And a British one at that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And his name is Trevor Slattery.
Yeah.
And there's also, a majority of the movie is Tony not wanting to be Iron Man, and remote controlling his suits from various spots, which is really, really lame. And also dealing with his trauma from when he was in outer space from the Avengers, or from the first Avengers movie.
Oh yeah, I suppose Peter Parker's dealing with the trauma of losing Tony.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
And so the whole time I was watching this movie, I just kept thinking, like, man, this is like Iron Man 3, but a billion times better.
I had the exact same thought, especially with, like, the reveal of where Mysterio comes from
mm-hmm.
in this universe, that he was somebody who worked for Tony Stark and was scorned by him, and that all of these underlings that are supporting him were the same. It was the same kind of reveal of Trevor Slattery being not only not the Mandarin, but there is no Mandarin. It's
yep.
just, like,
yep.
Mysterio. He's, there is no real Mysterio until they give him the name.
I like this reveal more.
I agree.
I'd also like to quickly just point out something else I just realized, which, you know, that means, because we do find out that this version of Mysterio is essentially created by Tony Stark firing him and taking his idea and turning it into a joke. But also in Homecoming, Tony Stark creates the Vulture, which means that every single one of Spider-Man's villains so far have been created
That's
by Iron Man.
That's entirely true. That is entirely true.
That'll be interesting.
Which
see.
Is pretty funny.
Well, especially yeah. now that the world is post-Iron Man.
Yeah.
yeah.
And Spider-Man is post-Iron Man, trying to figure out not only who he is, but who he's supposed to live up to
mm-hmm.
that Tony wanted him to be.
A lot of, like, you know, not quite the, like, underlying theme, but a portion of Parker's struggle was that everyone's asking, who's the next Iron Man? And add the pressure for him to be the next Iron Man, and I'm naive to a lot of Spider-Man comics, but like, for you two who know it, like, does he become the next leader of the Avengers? I thought that was going to be left to
there's
Falcon.
There's a billion iterations of the Avengers.
That's true.
And honestly, I don't have as extensive of knowledge about the comic book universe, but as far as I know, if he at all takes over the Avengers, it's as an adult.
Not
in the way that he is now. I mean, he is still a 16, 17-year-old high school.
Yeah,
they've confirmed that the Spider-Man sequel is going to take place during his senior year of high school.
Yes.
Okay.
And that the... Oh, what was I going to say? What were you guys just talking about?
Who's going to take the place of...
Yeah, there's also a billion different, timelines, so... It depends on which timeline you're looking at. I mean, probably a world where J. Jonah Jameson leads the Avengers.
Which, speaking of, okay, going back to this point about some of the best kept secrets that Marvel has ever done.
Yes.
I mean, they did such a good job with keeping the trailer secret. They got Tom Holland to shut up, and then you watch. The first post-credit scene of this movie, and it's J.K. Simmons playing J. Jonah Jameson. That is one of the best-kept casting secrets, in my opinion, of all time. Yes.
I lost my fucking shit.
He did. To put it mildly, fuck yeah. Like, me too. I sat in my seat in the theater trying not to yell because I was trying to listen to what was happening to retain that information. However, I was... internally just howling, and my friend who had gone with me is like, what? I'm like, you don't understand the implications of what is happening right now.
The other thing that I was super excited about was that they kind of kept this iteration of the character as the same one from the Spider-Man video game that came out a year or two ago.
Yes.
Where he's basically Alex Jones.
Yes.
Yeah, conspiracy theorist.
To tie it back into this real world scenario. And it is. Even his intro when he shows up on the Times Square, but the TV monitor in the middle of the city. It has the Daily Bugle in the exact same way that InfoWars is showing up. It's just, it's incredible.
It's great.
And I definitely geeked out very hard. One of my favorite parts of that movie, for sure.
I do want to say that one of the things I was kind of bummed about is that I thought that Jake Gyllenhaal did such a great job playing Mysterio. I thought that the villainous side of him was so fascinating. I thought that they did such a great job with the illusions. My only real complaint with his character was that I wanted to see more of him being a bad guy.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see more of the... I wanted to see Spider-Man go against more of the illusions.
Other than just one big bad elemental at the end.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen him almost combat more of the drones terrorizing the city, and I agree, I almost thought the moment where he has the drones trained on his underlings, I thought he was going to order them to shoot him. Yep. And I'm kind of disappointed he didn't, even though the human side of me is saying no, the empathy, but the other characterization side, I agree. It would have been nice to see a little bit more of that instability that he's really trying to capture show up.
Yeah.
Although that moment when he gets the glasses and then just starts like cheering.
Yes.
That was such a great moment.
Yes.
Because they really had me sold that they were giving Mysterio powers.
Well, the one thing kind of that I, going along with all this stuff, that I was a little disappointed is when Peter, he's angry and he's upset and he is, still kind of, emotionally, unstable due to all of the, big illusions that he kept putting him through. And then Quinn is, laying there and just kind of the jig is up when they're in the, I think they're in the top of the,
That tunnel.
That tunnel. Yeah. The bridge. Thank you. And he... I was really expecting him to, like, start firing in, because I almost wanted to see, like, this tiny sliver of, like, not quite evil, but, like, you know, he's a teenager. And teenagers, like, you know, can't control, or don't control their emotions very well. They're very hormonal, and I almost wanted to see him, like, tip that scale a little bit. And just because I feel like it would have gone along, it kind of would have emphasized the fact that, like, you know, it's not right, and we want him to be this humanitarian character, and he doesn't want to hurt anyone. But at the same time, he is a teenager who can't control his emotions, and so it's kind of what I was expecting, and it didn't happen, and I was a little disappointed.
Almost that step into the dark side, even if it was just a step.
Right. Because, I mean, again, if we're going to make the comparisons with Iron Man, like, that was something Tony struggled with a lot, was, again, he was, as they joked, like, he's a man-child, so him wanting to do the good thing, but not being able to help himself when his emotions get the better of him, and I would have liked that. Because they talk a lot in the movie about, you know, Tony wanted me to be better than him, and then it just kind of would have emphasized, like, yeah, but we all, you know, no one's ever gonna be, like, perfect, and so it kind of would have been nice, but it didn't happen, and I still enjoyed the movie. Mm-hmm. It was still really great.
My other main complaint, which it's also something that I enjoyed, was... I got really annoyed with the just get to it already feeling with MJ and Peter and their romance, because you know that they wind up together and they've all... And one of the things that I've loved about the Tom Holland movies is that they're doing things that none of the other Spider-Man movies have done. And we've already seen the Peter and MJ, like, trying to make it... Or, you know, he's, like, trying to get her and then losing her and trying to get her and losing her. And that story in the Tobey Maguire movies... And so we know that eventually at some point they're going to wind up together. And I guess that would have just... And don't they even show it in one of the trailers where she's like, I know you're Spider-Man?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen until almost the end of the movie.
Well, it's the big reveal of what Mysterio is to Spider-Man, where they get to that, and it's in the last probably half an hour, and that's pushing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I was just bummed. Like, I wish that they would have, especially something like that, because, you know, and that is something different, like, her knowing that he's Spider-Man so early into their relationship, but, and also, you know, Aunt May knowing that he's Spider-Man. I mean, these are all things that they haven't done in the movies before, and I was really, I was just really bummed that they stretched it out so long, and even though they did it in a way that I still found enjoyable... I was, like, there was always a part of me that was just like, just get to the part where...
They figure it out.
Yeah.
I agree.
Where you're dating. Yes. Like, just hurry up and get to that.
Yeah, you're awkward, I get it, but just kiss her already.
Exactly.
And I don't know if they're trying to set Ben up to be, like, a villain or something, but, because he seemed pretty pissed, but, yeah, I wish that they would, like, you know that they're going to wind up together, just hurry up, get to that part. One of my favorite kind of examples of that is one of the feelings that you can have when you're watching the movie 127 Hours, which is, like, one of my favorite films. You get that feeling of just cut your arm off already.
I'm just waiting for you to maim yourself.
Yeah.
I know it's coming. Just do it so I can be done.
Or like with the first Saw. I mean, you know the guy cuts his leg off. You're like, just cut your leg off already.
Yeah.
Save us all the next hour and a half.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that was my only other real complaint. Even though there's parts of it that I thought they did well and that I enjoyed, I wish that they would have hurried it along a little bit. So, yeah, I don't know. Did you guys have any other... Was there anything that bugged you guys that didn't work for you in the movie?
I agree on the pacing, and I understand that this movie is the capstone to Phase 3 as compared to the jump-starting of Phase 4, which, honestly, in my opinion, although I don't necessarily like the pacing all that much, it suits the movie better as an epilogue to Phase 3 than it does to a jumpstart of Phase 4. If it would have been the first movie of the next phase, I think it would have not as been a strong movie. So I understand the pacing, but it doesn't mean that I like it. And I didn't expect it to be Endgame, Infinity War, Captain Marvel level, like, action-oriented. And it had its moments, but I agree where it's just like, can we get to the next part already instead of, like, watching these kids do these summer vacation-esque activities? Which, again, I get why they're there, because he's trying to escape his responsibility of being a superhero, even for a little while, and just be a kid. It's just, it still gets to a point where I'm like, okay, can we just,
on now? And some of these superheroes are, you know, Endgame is, what, 3 hours long?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, like, Endgame needed to be, like, 3 hours long.
Yes.
I don't know that this needed to be 2.5 hours long.
I agree. It could have been a bit shorter.
I mean, and the scene at the very end where you figure out that, like, Nick Fury hasn't been Nick Fury.
For how long? Yes.
Like, and then, but he's still alive and he's just, like, on vacation. And, like, if people liked it, that's great. But that was kind of one where I was like, I could have done without this. Like, this didn't affect me in any way, and it didn't make me feel like it was setting up anything.
Exactly. It was pure shock value.
Yeah.
But it ends, and you're just wondering, is this kind of an allusion to Nick Fury also being on vacation and escaping his responsibilities?
Yeah.
Or how long has Talos been Nick Fury?
Mm-hmm.
Where has Nick Fury been the whole time? Which one of them has been, you know, is this setting
what happens in Captain Marvel 2?
Exactly. What is, if this is setting anything up, what is it? But it would have been nice to know just a teeny bit more information as to what that was.
Which, totally, like, see your point in everything. My own, personally, for me, I don't care. Like,
and that's
the shitty thing,
well,
is
that's,
that...
that's what I mean, is it didn't make people care enough to wonder. It's, if they would have, like I said, their end credit scenes, they're not meant to contain a lot of information.
Right.
But they are meant to capture your interest and make you sit here and wonder, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And instead, all you're left is, okay, Nick Fury's been gone, Skrulls have been him for a while... What?
Right. Yeah, and considering, and we can talk about the first post-credit scene in a little bit, but considering the implications of the first post-credit scene, and, you know, considering that this is the first MCU movie after Endgame, where just everything goes crazy, it felt kind of a bummer that they just kind of ended on a joke.
Yes.
Like, there wasn't, there's not really any implications, there's not really any, like, oh shit, what does this mean now? Like,
right.
I don't know, I think I would have been more interested if they revealed that Talos was calling somebody other than Nick Fury.
And that's kind of what I was half expecting. I was expecting him to be calling even Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And being like, I need you here, because it would make sense for him to call on her.
Because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yes,
right.
Not that she would either. I mean, how often is she even on Earth anymore? But at the same time, just the fact that it was Nick Fury was, it was pure shock value, and it got me. I'm sure, like, it got everyone else, but it just, it doesn't follow through even in the way that end credit scenes have been.
Yep.
So. Yeah. I think you do give you a little hint at one point, because when he says, like, can you get Captain Marvel?
And he says, don't you say her name.
Yeah, don't invoke her name.
And don't invoke her name.
Yeah, and I was just like... Like, I thought that was a little bit weird for Nick Fury. So, I get that they, like, it was kind of, they kind of gave you, like, a little hint, but more so in just a moment where you're like, oh, okay.
I think the biggest implication of that scene, really, is that the Skrulls were rebuilt. Because that entire space station, or wherever he is filled with Skrulls with, you know, amazing technology. So, it shows that Captain Marvel succeeded in her goal of going to space and helping them find a new home, whatever that may be. And maybe that's the setup is for Captain Marvel 2.
Yeah.
But still, for us to have to dig that deep, it seemed a little reaching.
Then my question for you guys is, so we just spent an entire movie watching, you know, things aren't what they appear. Like, this person isn't really who they say they are. So then I guess I mean, as I've already established, I didn't care about it, so yeah. I have no opinion. But, like, did you like that? That it just kind of continued, like, oh, here's another thing where, like, things aren't what they appear? Or was it just kind of, for you, like, all right, already?
Yeah.
There was... I really enjoyed, for the most part, the Nick... When Mysterio is Nick Fury.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that didn't bug me is because... Although we were in the theater, and I immediately turned to you and said, that's Mysterio.
Yeah.
They actually did a pretty decent job of convincing me otherwise at first. But then, yeah, as soon as he's like... And even before that, but as soon as he's like, so who else did you tell about this? You're like, oh, that's Mysterio.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. As soon as the interrogation starts, you're like, yep, that is... This is an illusion. It's not real.
And honestly, they could have just skipped that and had him get hit by the train anyway and then had Gyllenhaal go, you know what? Let's just kill his whole class.
Yeah. Like,
right.
I would have been fine with that.
That scene especially, while I loved the visuals of the illusions, they were amazing.
Yes.
And I understand... why they needed to be at that part in the movie. Agreed. It was a scene that felt... It took too long. It was too much of this build-up for you to forget that... For me, that's what happened, is I had the same thought. He gets to the office building, Nick Fury, that's Mysterio. Mm-hmm. Like, even when all the illusions start to disappear, still Mysterio. Mm-hmm. And then I forgot, because of all the illusions happening, and then when Nick Fury shows back up and shoots Mysterio, I'm like... Wait a minute.
Yep.
And
then same.
I was like, wait, hold on, wait. And then for it to be revealed again, I'm like, I already knew that.
Right.
I already knew that part. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, so speaking about the first post-credit scene where J.K. Simmons reveals to the world that.
Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Yeah, Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And that's kind of where they drop it, which is pretty great because. That's where they ended Homecoming with Aunt May finding out that Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Is that how Iron Man 1 or 2 ended?
It was one. Yeah. It's an interesting, I don't want to say parallel because it's not the same. Like Iron Man, Tony Stark chose to reveal himself as Iron Man even though he was at a press conference everyone already kind of knew.
Yeah.
And he just says, screw it, I am Iron Man, I'm going to embrace this.
Right.
Where Peter Parker... worked to keep his identity a secret, and it was forcibly revealed by one of his enemies.
Yeah.
And to the whole world. But not only that, his name is being slandered, because at that moment, he's being framed for a murder that he didn't commit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Murder, ooh. I should say, quote unquote.
One thing, backing up a tiny bit into things that bugged us, but, like you were talking about, Peter Parker is trying to hide his identity. However, the thing that bugged me so much throughout this movie is whenever he would have conversations with either his best friend, I'm blanking on his name right now, Ned, or MJ, the frickin' doors were open.
Yep.
Like, you are not keeping this a secret.
Or how much time he spends with his mask off talking to other people.
Yes!
Yep. Like, I get that it's part of the movie, it's the visual, but at the same time, I'm like, put your mask back on, dude.
Especially when he's with May at the fundraiser. Yes! It's like anybody could walk into that room.
And the way that he almost walks out back into the interview.
That's what you think at first.
That was my thought, too. I was like, did you just reveal your face to literally everyone?
Right? Is this how we're going to start this?
Yeah.
Like, that you accidentally revealed? But, no, I was just, like, constantly annoyed, because in the background, they're standing in a hotel room. The door is open. You are on a school trip with your classmates and your teachers.
And one of them is, like, angrily obsessed with you and wants nothing more than to ruin your life.
Yep.
Right!
Like,
ugh! I don't know if it was strategic and, like, trying to hint that, like, it was going to be revealed.
Maybe.
Or maybe it was just a giant mistake that they overlooked constantly.
Yeah.
But I was so annoyed.
All right, so now that the film ends with, you know, Peter Parker's or Spider-Man's identity being revealed, where do you guys think they're going to take this? Because... I don't know. My first thought was there is a Daredevil story arc that Frank Miller did where Kingpin is able to buy his identity, or Matt Murdock's Daredevil's identity, from Karen Page, and then just does everything in his power to destroy his personal life. And I don't know that Spider-Man has a Kingpin nemesis, but I'm super interested to see what they do, so I'm just curious, what do you guys think they're going to do with this after?
I mean, Scorpion was set up slightly at the end of Homecoming,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of preludes to a Sinister Six. However, most of that squad has not even been introduced as a regular character, let alone someone that could be his nemesis. So personally, well, I think I'd just like to see the follow-up of Scorpion.
And they've also been pretty, or Sony has been pretty adamant that they're doing a Sinister Six movie. So that sucks, because that means, because I don't know about you guys, but I was not a fan of Venom. Do not want to see Tom Hardy's Venom pop up in the MCU. No.
Well, because even, you'd have to tone it down,
mm-hmm.
or increase the rating of Spider-Man, which either way, in my opinion, does both characters a disservice. You either tone down the Venom character, who that movie was rated R for a reason,
mm-hmm.
or you...
Well, it was supposed to be rated R for a reason.
Or you jack Spider-Man's rating up to rating R, but that's not who Spider-Man is.
Mm-hmm.
He's not gonna kill anybody. It's just not who he is.
Right.
Not wantonly, anyway, like Venom does, so...
Well, when we were talking about the Tobey Maguire ones, and so just kind of, like, putting these pieces together throughout our conversation, but when we were talking about those ones and how... You said, Jason, you mentioned that him and MJ have this constant push and pull, like, we're together, we're not together, we're together, we're not together, and he leaves MJ at the end of Spider-Man 2, I believe.
First
Spider-Man.
Yes.
Yeah, where he was like, we can't be together because if my enemies find out that we're a couple,
even say all that.
I know, but that's like what the message is.
Yeah.
Is that then they're going to hurt you. And I think just Hollywood blockbusters who have that formula of they're together, they're not together, they're together. Well, it's like, we're building to... Even TV shows do this, but, like, we're building to their relationship, and now they're together, and we can only do it for so long, because then the audience gets bored, so then they have to break up, so then we can watch them struggle and try and get back together, and I just do not want that.
I agree.
That might be a little bit... Or, that's kind of what I think they're going to do, and I just, like, really hope they don't, because we already saw that. We saw that with Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst, and I'm just over it. I just want to see them, like, be together. That's fine. And Zendaya is a really good Mary Jane, and she's quite a badass, so I wouldn't mind seeing her as... You know, being able to take care of herself. Like, don't worry about
me. And for them to just have, like, a regular, as normal as you can...
Right.
...relationship. Like, I don't want to see them have a miscommunication where it almost breaks them up. Or I don't want to... Or what happened in the Amazing Spider-Man series with Gwen Stacy, where mm-hmm. she was able to take care of herself, and then she dies.
Right.
Well, I really don't think we have to worry about that, because the new movies have done a really great job of avoiding pretty much everything that the old movies have already done.
Yeah.
That's true.
They've avoided the Osborns.
Yes.
They've avoided setting up the Lizard.
Doc Ock.
They've avoided Doc Ock. They've avoided pretty much, they've avoided
Sandman.
Ben Parker dying.
Really the only... Jason and I were talking about that, is it's kind of nice because, you know, the first Spider-Man, that's just the Spider-Man standalone movie, we don't even have to go over the origin story. We all know it. We got it.
Yeah, he got bit by a spider. His uncle's dead. He's a superhero.
He lives with his aunt.
Done.
And so they don't talk about Uncle Ben. And then we constantly see in these movies, like, Aunt May flirting with Tony, and now, like, flirting with Happy, and Happy's into her, but they do still give, like, you a little bit of, like, oh, but remember Uncle Ben with his suitcase, and it just says the initials, which was nice. Like, that's all I needed.
Yes.
You know?
I was just gonna say, the thing that I said that I was gonna be fucking pissed if they make this reveal. But if Happy's like, oh, by the way, my first name is Ben.
I know.
Oh my god.
I would be so angry.
I probably would have walked out of that theater. I would have been like, you just ruined one of the best parts of your franchise.
Right. No, yeah.
Not everybody can have a perfect trilogy.
It would have put a good stop to the nobody stays dead but Uncle Ben trope.
Yeah.
It would have been a final end to, I guess nobody stays dead for anything or anybody.
Let's get into, I have a question for you guys, which is, which villain do you most want to see pop up in the next Spider-Man movie and why?
Like I mentioned earlier, I would like to see Scorpion, just because his character is only set up in the prison cell mm-hmm. at the end, talking to Toomes, the Vulture, from Homecoming. We don't know anything about his characterization, like what his abilities are going to be like. Is he going to be like Kingpin, commanding, you know, an organization from inside a jail cell? Is he going to get out? Is mm-hmm. he going to jumpstart the Sinister Six? Who knows? But another one I would actually like to see, even though we talked about avoiding the other movies, is either the Osborns or Doc Ock. Mm-hmm. Mainly, and I would like or, not and, just because they are such an integral part of what makes Spider-Man Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Do we need to have the kind of backstory we've had for both of them? Maybe not necessarily, but just to have them introduced, even a time skip of Peter Parker was at this facility and met Norman Osborn, whatever, or Osborn moved into the city and this is what he's doing and now he's the Green, whatever it is. You know, like, I would just like to see one of them appear. Mm-hmm. If not Scorpion. Scorpion would be my first pick, though, just because we've already seen him introduced and I would hate for that thread to be left hanging.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think if they did Doc Ock, into the Spider-Verse, where Doc Ock was a woman, and I really enjoyed that version of it. And so if they did decide to do that one, it would be nice to see a gender bend. And
I agree.
To have, like, Doc Ock be, like, you know, like, live, like, Octavius or whatever her name was.
Well, and similarly to how Marvel was portrayed in Captain Marvel, where the original incarnation of Marvel was male, this one was a Kree female, which was spectacular to me. I loved how they wrapped the story in it. It made it so much cleaner. So.
Yeah. I mean, and I get it. I know that people get upset because they want it to be true to the comics, and I totally appreciate that, but it is also nice to just see. I mean, we saw with Captain Marvel, you know, the Skrulls are supposed to be the bad guys, but they aren't, and so there's kind of a switch. And so I think just, like, even little switches like that, as much as at first, you know, you might be upset because it's not true to comic form, but it can be done really well, and it's good.
Not only that, but this, if they were to go with Doc Ock, this would be the third time Doc Ock has been portrayed in a major motion picture.
That's true.
So,
but I would also like to remind everyone quick while we're talking about continuity that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is technically considered its own timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So while they are based on the comic books, and yes, we want to see characters come to life from the comic books, I would like to just remind everybody that it is Earth 616 for a reason. It is its own continuity, and things that happen can change because that is how they happen in that story.
It's our own multiverse.
Yes.
I just meant that, like, you portray these characters. Like, for instance, Norman Osborn was portrayed in Spider-Man 1. He was portrayed in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Like, same kind of version of the character in each movie. Why not do something different?
Exactly. Yeah, agree. Which is why, personally, like I said, I think Scorpion, we haven't seen him in any movie yet. He's been set up. It would be amazing.
Well, and so far they've pretty much stuck to villains that haven't been portrayed on the big screen.
Yes,
so
which has been amazing.
Yeah.
That's why I'm hoping they'll keep up that
Who
that trend.
Would you like to see?
Kraven the Hunter.
Yes.
Definitely. I mean, I'm kind of bummed because I'm pretty confident it's not going to be Kraven the Hunter, because Sony's already announced that they're making a Kraven the Hunter movie, which is pretty fucking stupid, because if it's just Kraven the Hunter and there's nobody else in the movie, like, who is he hunting?
Exactly. What's the point?
Well, he's got that, like, voodoo, like, what, he's got, like, a companion that practices voodoo. You have no idea who I'm talking about, but, I mean, I was just, like, reading about it.
Oh, okay. But no, I know that, like, one of like, the big Spider-Man stories is his final battle with Kraven the Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, doing something like that. And then the only other thought that I had is that it would be really fun if they're going to reintroduce, and although I don't know if I'm ready for this quite yet, just because I think season one of Daredevil is the best thing that the MCU or that this iteration of Marvel has ever created. I don't know that I'm quite ready for a new Matt Murdock, but it would be kind of fun if they introduced Daredevil in this way. Like, oh, hey, you know what? That's who Spider-Man is. I'm just some guy or blind guy running around beating up people.
Yeah.
Cool. We should talk.
Would you be interested in Punisher?
I don't know. I feel like
they haven't done Punisher well.
They have. I really like...
Lately.
I really like Punisher Warzone.
Oh,
I think that
yeah.
movie is severely underrated. And I also... I have not yet watched the Netflix Punisher show, but I did like Jon Bernthal on Punisher... Or not Punisher, Daredevil Season 2.
Yeah, he was good.
And... So I don't know. I would just be more interested in Daredevil because he's another New York-based superhero, and so I'd be interested in seeing them interact together, and he could, or maybe he could just slide into like the new mentor place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a mentor.
Because there's
Spider-Man.
More of a dark side to Daredevil, so it would be interesting to see that conflict.
He's the guilt superhero.
Yeah.
Yes.
So mine took like. Picking mine took research because I am not familiar with too many Spider-Man villains. The one that I came across, though, that I would have really liked to see, but again, like Jason said, mine will not happen, was Jackal.
Mm-hmm.
With his cloning abilities, and he uses that to, like, torture Spider-Man, I thought would have been really interesting and really cool to see. Again, like Riley and I were talking about, the technology we have now would have just been, would have been a great time for it, but I feel like they covered a lot of that with Mysterio, because, you know, the special effects and cloning. I mean, cloning is different, but at the same time, like, we're still getting the same... I feel like we're still getting the same kind of mental torture. And then throughout Far From Home, it was a lot of the... He didn't need to be, like, faced with Iron Man, although he did have that one little blip. Ha. that one little scene where Iron Man was, like, crawling out of the grave, but there was just so much around the world as he traveled that was an homage to Tony that I feel like using the clone... That if Jackal was around, used the cloning to show Tony, I feel like it would end up being... We've already seen this.
Yes.
So, as... I'm disappointed because I feel like that would be a really interesting thing to see with Tom Holland... But I acknowledge that it's not going to happen because not that we got the Jackal, but it would be kind of the same feeling.
Be redundant.
That, yeah, yes. It would be really redundant.
The last thing that I really have about Spider-Man before we start really wrapping up is I really hope that they call the next movie Spider-Man Back Home.
Again.
Yeah, or Home Again.
Homecoming Part 2. And he's back from summer vacation.
Or
back
if he's,
from summer vacation.
If he's on another planet, if they call it further from home.
Just a little bit further from home.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, I think I can safely say, though, that you guys would all recommend this movie, right? People
oh,
check it out.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yep.
All right, well.
Riley and I talked about how, I believe it was this movie, was like... No, I'm definitely going to go see it again while
yes.
it's still in theaters.
Just to even see those tiny little details.
Yeah.
You know, the even more of the background information would be...
I think it's worth watching just again just for the J. Jonah Jameson.
Oh my gosh, so I can really appreciate it. Yes,
you can really get the subtleties of Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons acting.
I knew it was coming, and I knew that Jason was going to be so excited.
Yeah,
because we
had talked about it on Friday. That's right.
I almost feel like I didn't enjoy it as much as I could have because I was like kind of watching the screen, but I was really just like watching his face with like anticipation. Like my eyebrows were as up as far as they could be, just waiting.
I know what's coming.
Right? Waiting for him to just turn or, like, react and, like, look at me like, oh my god! But, so yeah, I would like to see it again just so I can enjoy that part now of my own.
Alright, so, I would like to quickly go ahead and plug my Twitter account where I bait people into arguing with me. It is at Argue With Jason.
Yes, please do it. The more you do, the less I have to.
We would also like to ask you to follow us on Twitter at The Outer Frame. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, The Outer Frame.
Instagram is The Outer Frame Podcast. I run it. I have not been great these last couple of months. I apologize to your audience, and I will get back on
Jace.
The collective Jace. Mm-hmm. I will get back on top of it. Although I run it when there are questions posed or comments, they do immediately go to Jason.
Now, this is a big deal because Donnie was supposed to have watched Source Code this week in preparation for talking about Far From Home because Jake Gyllenhaal is in it. So I don't know if he's watched it yet, and I guess we'll find out on the next episode.
I have. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. I have not yet watched Alpha, and I don't know when I ever will. So, yeah, please like and subscribe and follow our podcast. Please look at Preston Alexander's art. He does the art for the show. You can find him on Instagram and Twitter and Twitch and everything else under the name Pralix. You can look for music by Dr. Tub Thumper, who does our intro music, although you are likely to not find anything. But if you do find something, please send it to us, because I'm sure we'd love to hear it. And yeah, I think that's it. So please just keep watching movies. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.